Buddy, if you would lead us this morning. Let's go to God in prayer. Thank you. All right. You know, when you look at these parables, it's interesting to note how our Lord used everyday things and common occurrences and things that people see in their life as means by which to get across a certain point, a spiritual application to people. And none of these are any different here that we're looking at today. Chapter 15 of Luke, he had answered some charges by the Pharisees that he spent his time with sinners and with tax collectors, and he ate with them. And so he gave three parables in that chapter. I think y'all have looked at those. I wasn't here for those. Do you remember what they were and what they were about? Just last Wednesday night was Prodigal Son, I believe. Okay. Both of them. All right? Both. The lost coin. Okay? And lost sheep. What was the gist of all three of those? Lost things have value. And it shows the Father's love for those who are lost, doesn't it? Wanting to draw them in and get them and bring them in. So he was in those parables really directing at the Pharisees and their charges. You know, what are you doing spending your time with these people? You know, you should be with us, the good thing. But those that are lost need the Lord too. And so in this parable, he points his thoughts to his disciples. But we're going to find out the Pharisees are listening as well. They listened to everything he had to say. They wanted to hear more, find a way to trip him up. The parable of the unjust steward is the first one we're going to look at. Now, I don't know if we'll get to the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. There's so much here that is applicable to us that we need to think about. We'll see. This parable is difficult sometimes for people to interpret. And the problem with a lot of parables is they can go in. I think you've talked about this before. Every person and everything, every item, every detail, people want to make some type of significance out of it. You really can't do that. There's really one center idea or point that the Lord is trying to bring out. Now, other items, other details can be used to add to that same point. But you got to be careful in how you interpret what you're reading. And over the years, that's been kind of difficult in this one, I guess. But there is a central truth, and all the details have to be understood in light of that truth. So let's read here in Luke 16, starting verse 1. Someone read through, I'll read through verse 8, and we'll go from there. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, And an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward." Then the steward said within himself, "What shall I do? For my master is taking his stewardship away from me. I cannot dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." So he called every one of his master's debtors to him, and said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" He said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, "Take your bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, "Take your bill, and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. All right, so let's go back and review this a little bit and think about it. You've got this steward who is over the master's estate as far as taking in the funds. He's loaned out monies. I don't know how this has occurred. But anyway, he has debtors. He has people that owe him. And if you think about it, if you think about a steward, this automatically made me think of somebody in the Old Testament. Can you think of who? Who was somebody that was over an individual's house? Joseph. Exactly. In Genesis 39, if you think back to that, he was over Potiphar's house. And if I remember right, he told Potiphar's wife, well, he didn't have to tell her. If you look at that, he found favor in the sight of Potiphar and served him. Then Potiphar made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. He trusted Joseph. Joseph was a good individual, and he was blessed by God. Potiphar saw that. He left, verse 6, he left all that he had in Potiphar's hand, and he did not know what he had, except for the bread which he ate. Very trusting individual. Now this rich man, he had a nice, I guess we'd say today, a nice friend. He had money. And so much so that apparently the steward must have served him well previously. He was trustworthy. And so he put it into his hands. Well, he was taken under and funding his own coffers. Let's put it that way, apparently. He was stealing. The rumors reached his master, and the master brought him in and said, "That's it. You're done." So he was a shrewd fellow. What's he do? What does he do? Brother Bob, go ahead. You're just wanting to say something. There you go. This individual is like so many that we see today. He's living for the here and now, the jig is up, and he's going to use what is at his disposal to get himself out of a pickle, right? He knows his career is done. Now, the problem with this is, he's what we call soft, isn't he? I can't labor. Can't work. Who's going to hire me? That's another thing. Who would hire an untrustworthy steward? They're not going to do it. And he's physically not going to do it because apparently he hadn't been doing that all along. He's been attending to the books. Right? And he won't do what? He's too proud to beg. He's too weak to work. He's too proud to beg, but he's not too proud to steal. And so, what's he do? He's a pretty smart fellow, really. Well, I'll take care of this. I'll cook the books. It's amazing to me that he had control of this. So he calls in the people that owe his master, and he says, "What do you owe? Cut it in half." The first guy, he owed to oil. Apparently it's olive oil. Now, it's hard to get the exact amount of volume that these things meant, but the best I could find was 100 measures of oil was equal to 800 gallons of oil. So it says half that. Only say you owe 400. And the next one owed 1,000 bushels of wheat, which the best I could find was that's 100 measures of wheat was 1,000 bushels of wheat. So he only owes, make it 800, okay? We'll take quite as much off of your bill. Why does he do that? Huh? Well, maybe getting a pay, yeah. If my bill's cut in half, hey, I got a chance now. He bought them off, didn't he? Now, the reason he did that was what? When my master lets me go, I got friends now. Before, he was doing his master's bidding and charging what he needed to charge. And quite frankly, there's another way to think about it. Maybe it was usury. Maybe the master's charging too much. So he could protect himself in either way. The master could be, I never charge that much. 400's fine or 500's fine. Anyway, the point is, he has a place to go possibly when he's let go. He's watching out for his own skin. Any good crook would do that, wouldn't they? They're going to look for an escape, a way to get out of the situation. So he's smart. In this sense, he found a way to get out. But the other amazing thing about what happens is what? What's the master? You'd think the master would just be livid. What does he do? He commends him. I can't imagine. One thing that just sends me is a person lying to me, which essentially is what this is, or a person stealing from me. To me, they're one and the same. It's just the same kind of, you know, let me have it. So, all three of the groups of the people in this story are rascals, if you stop and think about it. The steward's dishonest as he can be. The debtors are dishonest. They're going to take, hey, yeah, I'll write my note less. And really, the master is a worldly man because he appreciated a wrong, an evil thing that this man did. So, it's an interesting story. The steward was not only slick. He was singularly focused. This is key. He was singularly focused, far-sighted, and resourceful. Unfortunately, those are the skills that work to his benefit and not to his master's. He could have used them in the right way. We're getting there. Give me a minute. We got to build a foundation for it, but it's good. There's plenty of application here for us in this parable. So that's the question. What does this unprincipled man, this worldly man, have to offer to us in way of something to learn and apply spiritually to our lives? Why would the Lord use this parable? So let's go on down. Let's think about it. What can this guy teach us? The Lord commends him for his character, for his shrewdness. Okay? Now, usually when you think of shrewd, what do you think of? Do what? Cunning and crafty. Many times we think of it in a negative way, don't we? Oh man, he's shrewd. I usually think of it in a negative characteristic of somebody. That's a shrewd individual. I've used that myself. But it can also be used in a positive way. Characterized by keen awareness, sharp intelligence, often in the sense of something being practical. Okay? They're shrewd. They know what they're doing. They're sharp. Some of your translations also say prudence. He commended him for his prudence. I've got four definitions of that. Prudence is the ability to govern and discipline oneself by the use of reason. Shrewdness, it's used in the definition here of prudence. Shrewdness in the management of affairs. Sounds like this guy. Skill and good judgment in the use of resources. Caution or circumspection as to danger or risk. Now see, all those things really define this guy, but he used them in the wrong manner. Okay? The steward was a carnal man. I want to read this one quote that I found. This is from Brother Earnhardt. He was a rascal, but he was a wholehearted rascal. Jesus' point is that if ungodly men, here you go, ungodly men can focus so intently and shrewdly on worldly aims, why can't God's people wholeheartedly make all their resources serve eternal ends? In short, that cheat of a man judges those Christians who invest the bulk of their physical resources and time in here and now enterprises. You understand what he's saying? What the Lord commends and what the Lord's trying to get across, I believe, to us, I agree with that, is this guy, he's a worldly man, he's a carnal man, and we know from looking at other passages and other things in the Bible, the characters in the Bible, you can have a very worldly individual that there's something about them that can be applied to us as an example. And this guy, this was it. He was prudent. He was shrewd. He was focused, and he was earnest in everything that he did, especially in this situation. And so the Lord's trying to get across, as we're going to see a little bit more as this develops, he's trying to get across to us. Why can't we as Christians be as earnest, prudent, focused on eternal things that we use the lesser things, the worldly things, to our advantage to get to those eternal things that we need to do? I think it's a good point. And I think it's one that all of us need to consider. This is, as I've said before, every time I study one of these lessons, I see something for me here. And I know that in my lifetime, focusing on my business, I have let that force out times where I need to spend more and be more engaged in spiritual matters. And maybe you do too. Maybe you've seen that in your life. That is something for all of us to hardly consider, very, very hardly consider. The devil knows your weaknesses. And those things that can be right can become wrong when they overtake our life and push God out. So, I think the example that the Lord's trying to get across to us is, in this guy, he was focused, he was intent, and he was earnest. That's what we need to be spiritually. Look, just think about the way worldly people pursue their ambitions. They'll do anything to get ahead. This guy did. So we can float through life thinking things are just fine, and not put much effort into our spiritual life. Show up, you know, be here when the doors are open. Quite frankly, that's not going to do it for our spiritual life. Yeah, exactly. Turn with me over. I couldn't help but think about Ephesians. Turn over to Ephesians. There are several things that I think are just key here that I have to bring out. Ephesians chapter 4, talking about these brethren, he's talking about their way of life and the blessings that they have in Christ, and that they're a new creature. Look in chapter 4, verse 1, therefore I, Paul, prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. Now look on down to verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. Sound like somebody we've been talking about? But you have not so learned Christ. If indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to this deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. One more in chapter 5, starting in verse 8. I love these. Walk in light, walk in love, walk in wisdom. But starting in verse 8. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. I love this verse. Therefore he says, awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk, what? Circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Now, doesn't that sound like those passages sound exactly like what we're talking about? Don't walk like that steward. Don't pattern your life after him. He's a Gentile. He's a man of the world. He's carnal. But put your efforts like that steward and your focus and your energies towards the Lord and attaining your eternal goal. That's the lesson that I get out of this. Is he admired, the Lord is trying to get us to see, we have to put more effort into our spiritual lives. Any other thoughts? Brother Bob?
I think the Lord makes the application of the parable in the next verse.
Yeah. Yep. Let's go on. Let's read a little more. Starting verse 8, I didn't read the last part of 8. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Do you not see that sometimes? Sometimes people in the world are a little more adept, are more adept at doing things in the world than they are spiritual things, of course. But sometimes the children of light, that is, Christian, those that are supposed to be spiritually minded, are a little slow when it comes to worldly things. Now, look, 9. I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. Some verses or translations say that when it fails, they may receive you into an everlasting home. I like that translation better. For who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. All right, so, what is the point, Brother Bob? Yes.
He was in control of the master's problem.
Right.
And he used it in a way to build for himself when he was put out of his job. The Lord's application is we ought to use the things that are at our disposal.
Exactly. That's right. That's correct. And using what you have. Yeah, if you look, it makes it clear in, sometimes it doesn't make it clear. If you look at it, I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Some people look at that and say, what's mammon? What is mammon? Material things. Okay? And so it throws us off when we see that, doesn't it? It shouldn't. But it can. When you say that, make yourself friends for yourselves with unrighteous mammon. Unrighteous is that which is not good, right? Or it can mean what? Those things that are not as important, those things that are not dependable. Okay? All right? We know, we understand that material things are what? They're temporary. Right? They're passing. Time and again, you see people who want to be miserly. They hold on to everything they got. They won't let it go. And so that's selfishness. It's useless. They die. Not going with them. He says, use, as Brother Bob has pointed out, I'll develop a little bit more as we're going, use what is available to you. God has created all good things. As we've talked about before, I think, in lessons, material things are not wrong. They're an adjunct. They're a tool. And how we use them, we have to use them correctly. And I think that's the point. As Brother Bob pointed out, the steward was a smart guy, and he used what tools he had to get out of the situation that he had. And the Lord's telling us the same thing. Use what you have to go forward and to develop a spiritual relationship. He ends his parable with saying, you can't serve both. You can't serve material things and the devil and serve God at the same time. You got to choose one or the other. So, all right. Go ahead. What part? Right.
And that's certainly not by making friends with unrighteous men.
Okay.
There's something not for that to do.
Think about instead of when it says when you fail, think about putting it when it fails. Okay? You can make anything evil that you want to. Right? And particularly here, we're talking about material things, money. Nothing wrong with money. It's a tool. So, like any tool, if you use it the wrong way, I have a bad habit when I get a tool or something, or put something together, I don't read the instructions. I get hurt once in a while. You gotta watch that. You gotta be careful. It is a tool, but you gotta know how to use it. Money the same way. It's a tool. We can use our funds to do with what we need to do. Got that? Okay. What you're having trouble with is, what does it mean that when it fails, and it will fail? Well, it says you, but it also says when it, in the other term. Go ahead, Bob. Bail me out. I can see. Everybody's looking to you. Let's go. Oh, great. Right.
So it's a matter of using the things that are available to you now. That's life itself, our time, our effort, our money, or anything else. Jesus is saying, use the things that you have available to you today, so that when they fail, your life fails, your time's gone, your money, everything. When the world goes,
that's correct.
Let's
take that question. Right. Right. And the other way of thinking about that is, we've talked about this before. Whose is it anyway? It's God's. Right? It's God's. Everything that we have, my being, me, my soul, our wealth, our home, our family, our brethren, you name it, our education, they're all God's. Now, who am I to not use them properly, see? See, that becomes like this too, or that becomes selfish. I'm withholding it. I'm becoming miserly with it. All right? So, yeah, there is a lot of controversy about that as far as welcome you into heaven, but that is correct. Only the Lord and God can receive us into heaven. But the other beautiful thing about it, the other way I've seen it discussed is that using your funds in the proper way, we can have an impact on those who are not children of the Lord and possibly get them to obey. Okay, Kim? Right.
Basically, it's like you use your resources. If one or anything else, you make relationships.
Okay.
Because that's the most important. Because the thing that happens with that is the parents are making fun of him by saying, "Give them money."
Okay. And in this situation, he's talking about unrighteous mammon. Let's see. Wow, we got a bunch. Mike?
So, something that helps me to understand is that the New American Standard reads it a little bit differently than you kind of alluded to it. Make friends for yourself by means of the wealth of righteousness so that when it fails, they will receive you into the eternal dwelling. Just look at the wealth of righteousness and fail. All he's saying is that the things that are worldly, that are not lasting,
right.
That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about necessarily money. We're not talking about anything else other than the principle of this is not something that's eternal.
Right.
This is something that is in this age that will pass away, that's not going to be long-lasting. You look over in Matthew 6, you look at the discussion there, Jesus really gets into some more details that help us to understand this parable. He talks about fasting and what the Pharisees did to kind of make themselves out to be more righteous than what they were. He said that's passing away. They're going to get what they're going to get today, but it's not going to be something that lasts. Put your focus on the things that last by using what you have right now.
Yep.
That's going to pass away.
Right.
Because the results are going to stay. The actual thing itself, and you also look at verse 14, the Pharisees who were looking
right.
He was telling them what you're looking at is not going to last.
Right.
But you use that to make what will.
He was telling this to his disciples, but he was pointing at them. This is the problem. Now, also, if you look at verse 11, this clears up, I think, in my mind, quite a bit, too. He's making a contrast, and Mike alluded to this. He's making a contrast between what's unrighteous and what are true riches. Okay? Look, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, that is, if you have not been faithful in how you use whatever you have to build your relationship with God, then who will commit to your trust the true riches? All right? There's a contrast here. There's those things that are unrighteous. The definition had for unrighteous, we often think of unrighteous as evil. But it's those things that can be uncertain and not dependable. That's what we're talking about. Material things are uncertain. You can think about that. The Depression, good night. People were jumping out of windows because they lost everything they had. They put all their faith in that. He says, don't put your faith in that stuff. That is a means to an end. That gets you where you need to be. Use it in the right way. Right. Yeah. Mike, real quick, I can get to Steve.
Use it, but don't depend on it.
Right. Right. Steve? There's so much in this parable. I mean, there's the contrast there of this guy who's just wanting it all. And then the Lord's trying to get across to us that are His children. Instead of doing this, we need to be broadcasting it. You know? It's not something. Use what you have at your disposal to broadcast the Word of God. Right. Yep.
The application in verse 9 is you should use what is available. We have a tendency to look at money as evil.
Right.
As a matter of fact, it's referred to as filthy lucre. Just a general idea of evil. Jesus says, use what is at your disposal to make friendship with God for eternity.
Yep. Emma, I've ignored you. Yeah. One last thing. Don't go. Just real quick. One last thought. Just for you to think about. The steward was called in to give an account. We're all stewards, aren't we? We will be called for an account one day. Think about that. Very good. Thank you.